views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and you're listening to the Conscious Business Radio Network on Transformation Talk Radio. I am replaying an interview today that I had with Ed Moy, who is the director of the Mint. And he served under Obama and Bush. And I haven't had a chance to play it here on this network yet. And so I wanted to play it so everybody could hear it. It's really an interesting interview that I did with them, and it's really relevant to today. I just did this last year, and I think that since a lot of people haven't heard it on this channel, I wanted to replay it. But he has an interesting background, not only being the director of the Mint, he also was responsible for helping to do political appointments in a lot of independent agencies. And he also helped form the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, and he was responsible for staffing high-ranking positions in the U.S. Department of Justice and the Office of National Drug Control Policy. So he has a lot of experience with the federal government and with international politics and what's going on in geopolitical situations and so forth. But his background is very interesting, and it's very relevant today on what's going on with the economy and such. So I hope you enjoy this interview with Ed Moy.
Hi, Ed. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, I've been interested in talking to you for a while because the gold has been a really hot topic over the last 5 years. It's probably been a hot topic amongst a certain group probably forever. But as far as our country goes, there's been a lot more attention given to gold. And so I wanted to talk to you and ask you some questions about it. But first, I want to ask you some general questions because you were the 38th director of the U.S. Mint. And my understanding is that you were appointed by George Bush. And you, how long did you serve?
The director of the United States Mint serves at a 5-year term that is confirmed by the United States Senate.
And can you serve multiple terms? Is it usually just a single term?
Past Mint directors serve multiple terms, but in the modern presidency, most Mint directors just serve one term. I served 3 years under George Bush and 2 years under President Obama.
Okay. And I noticed that the position is still vacant. Is there a reason why it would be vacant still?
Yeah, it's one of the most desired positions. When you talk about, having an impact in the economy as well as a fun job, and that one that's interesting and historical, there's a lot of people that are interested. So I don't know why that continues to be vacant. It ends up hurting the direction of the Mint because a career person ends up stepping up and being the acting director, and they're generally a little bit shyer, so they're willing to take a lot less risk. And as a result, the agency can hurt.
Yeah, is it a strategy thing or is it just partisan politics and they can't get anything done?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You're going to have to ask them about it. But, I also served in the White House in presidential personnel. And so it was my job to help fill all these positions. And we never let a position gather dust. It's important for the American people to have good public servants that lead these things, that end up doing good things for America. And it's a shame that that position's been vacant for so long.
Yeah, it just seems interesting. It's weird. So getting on to some other stuff, there's been a big surge of interest in gold over the last 5 years in the United States. Do you believe that simply because the economy is in rough shape?
That was a big impetus of it, is when the economy started going south, one of the key things that investors look for when there's a lot of uncertainty in the economy is investments in tangible assets. And one of the most common and historical ones is gold, which has been around for 5,000 years. And so that's what kind of sparked the interest. But, you know, gold also, in times of, you know, obviously investors are interested in times of crisis, but when there's no crisis, things are getting better, gold should still be part of a balanced portfolio. And the reason for that is, usually when your paper assets, like stocks, bonds, and cash, which are, you know, three major asset categories, those are all dollar denominated. And when the dollar, begins losing value through inflation, gold ends up rising in price. And so you want enough gold in your portfolio to offset the potential downside. So I'd look at gold as an insurance policy.
So it's an insurance policy against inflation, essentially.
That's correct.
So that's why you're interested in gold personally. But I have one thing that's always been a question for me is gold seems to be so highly manipulated. So does that hurt its investment value?
Well, you know, that's an interesting word that you use, the manipulation, because all investments to some degree are manipulated. Stocks are shorted, they're bought long, you can buy futures, you can get derivatives off of those, and all those are manipulated by the market. And gold is subject to the same types of financial instruments that many people would define as manipulation. Bottom line, though, is the gold that I'm a big advocate for is owning physical gold. It's one thing to own an ETF, of which, you know, another financial institution holds onto that gold, and you kind of buy a share in that organization, and you benefit off the price rises or off the price decreases. It's different than actually owning physical gold. And so when I was director of the United States Mint, the Mint became the largest maker of gold bullion coins in the world, and our demand rose 900% for both our silver and gold bullion coins. And so there's a lot of investors out there that want to hold on to a physical commodity to have control over that.
Well, isn't it true that with an ETF, you don't have, so if you want to cash that in, there could be a chance that there's no gold to cash in. I mean, there could be a problem.
That's mostly true. So when you buy an ETF, that share that you own in the ETF does not entitle you to a share of the gold. It only is a share of the proceeds of if the ETF makes profits, you get a split off of that. But you can't redeem that share of the ETF for the equivalent weight of gold from the ETF. And ETFs make money by leveraging that gold. So not only do they own the gold and they benefit from the gold's rising price or falling price, but ETFs then loan that gold out for people who want to short gold. And so they'll rent out that gold. And in an ETF, it wouldn't be unusual for 70 to 90 owners.
Oh, geez.
For every ounce of gold that you have there.
And so
that's why I like physical gold is when I have a American Eagle gold coin, that's my gold coin. Nobody else owns a share of that.
It's a real investment. Financial advisors are really hardcore in wanting you to go into ETFs. In fact, so many of them don't even offer physical gold.
Right, and that's because physical gold is a specialty that is sold through gold bullion dealers, and the investment advisor doesn't get a cut of that. However, the investment advisor gets a cut if he or she sells you a share in ETF. And so they make money by selling you ETF. They don't make money if they sell you gold.
Yeah, so who wants to sell something that doesn't make them any money? Although, could they become a seller of gold, or it just isn't as profitable, so they don't get into it?
It's not that it isn't as profitable. It is more complicated of a transaction. So, when, you know, a typical investment broker deals in bonds and stocks, and they work with brokerage firms, you know, to affect those transactions. But when you have gold, physical gold, you also have to deliver it. And a lot of these investment firms aren't equipped to do the secure delivery that a gold dealer would if you bought it right from the gold dealer.
They have to change their mindset and their infrastructure to make it work, and that's a big deal.
That's exactly right, Sarah.
Okay. So could you just buy gold and put it in a safe in your home? Is that a wise thing to do?
Well, when you buy physical gold, one of the reasons why you buy the physical gold is you want to have it. And you don't want to have difficulty accessing it. So most people, when they buy gold, end up keeping a little bit in a safe place in their home. And they put the balance in their safe deposit box in their bank, their local bank. And then if you end up being able to invest in lots of gold where safety deposit box is no longer practical, there's a lot of very secure depositories that are sprung up all over the United States, mostly in the major cities, that you can store large amounts of gold.
And do you think that is a safe place for it? Like, say, if the government, and the government has done this before where they've confiscated gold, would they be able to take your gold out of those depositories?
Very unlikely. So when the government confiscated gold before, it was in 1933, and Roosevelt had become president, and he wanted to stimulate the economy. But back then, there was a gold standard, and you could only print as much money as you had gold to back, and all the money had already been printed. And so the only way that Roosevelt could get enough money to stimulate the economy was to force Americans to turn in all their gold
Makes sense.
Right. And then automatically, he tripled the amount of money he could print.
So unless we go back on the gold standard, that wouldn't happen.
That's right. There's really no logical reason, no financial or monetary reason why the federal government would want to confiscate your gold today.
Unless they went back on the gold standard, which would be not something they could feasibly do in with our current infrastructure and what we have going
on. That's correct.
So
this
is kind of out of the box question, but there's all these rumors and things. Is there gold at Fort Knox? That's where the big U.S. You're laughing. Nobody knows, right?
Well, Sarah, I could tell you, but then I would have to kill you. So, and I like you so much that I
want
to do that.
That's so funny.
Sarah, actually, as Mint Director, one of my responsibilities is to protect our nation's gold reserves. And so I had oversight over our bullion facility in Fort Knox. And I've been there multiple times, at least several times a year. And I can tell you that there really is gold in Fort Knox. And every year, the Inspector General puts out a audit report where they go into Fort Knox to check all the secure vaults, the seals, et cetera. And they produce this report, which says that there's gold in Fort Knox. And I can actually tell you, physically, I've been there, I've seen it, and the gold that's reported in the audit report is the gold that's in Fort Knox.
Oh, that's cool. That's good to know. How come there's such a rumor mill going that there's no gold there?
Well, from time to time, particularly during the 70s, when the world went off all links to gold, then there was rumors that all these countries, including the United States, ended up selling that gold. And that was one of the few times that it was approved for outside visitors to visit Fort Knox so that all the people, reporters, members of Congress, could end up seeing that there was actually gold there. And right now you're having a similar situation. Central banks all over the world are beginning to ask, do we really have gold? I mean, Germany, for one example, stores a lot of gold at the New York Federal Reserve. And as a result, they've asked the Federal Reserve to allow their people to come in and take a look to make sure the gold is still there. So it's still happening today.
Okay, so that makes sense. Is China stockpiling gold more than what they're saying they're doing?
Yeah, you know, so that's another really good question, and it's really hard to say because the Chinese reporting on their gold buying is pretty opaque, and they only release that information once every 5 or 6 years, and, you know, who knows how true that information is.
We have to take a short break, and we will be back in a moment.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
And we're back with Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. We're talking to Ed Moy about precious metals and the economy and his background. So we will rejoin this interview now.
But what we do know is a lot of gold has been transferred from the West, meaning Europe and in the United States, as institutional investors in the West have lost interest in gold. The ETFs, as you mentioned before, have huge stockpiles of gold that's not being leveraged, and they're not making money on it, so they're selling it. That's going through Switzerland, being reprocessed, and a lot of it's being shipped to Asia, and we think a lot of it's been going to China. So China and Russia and a number of other countries like India, their central banks have been buying gold. It's just that we don't know exactly how much China's been buying.
Interesting. So it probably is true. Well, so getting off on a little bit different subject, silver is something that people talk about a lot and say that silver might be just as good or even a better investment as gold. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I have a few thoughts. And the first one is it depends on the type of investor and what their investment goals are. If you're a relatively small investor and you don't have a lot of disposable income, it's a really big stretch to buy 1 ounce of gold at $11.50, which is what it costs today. Whereas you can buy a lot of silver when silver's trading at $17.
Exactly.
And so silver ends up becoming very affordable for investors that don't have large amounts of money to invest. However, if you do have large amounts of money to invest, then buying the equivalent amount of silver to what you can buy with 1 ounce of gold, you're going to need an awful big place to store that. And so that's why investors focus on gold. The other aspect here is, when you take a look at the long term, people who end up buying silver is more volatile. Mm-hmm. You know, a $2 swing in silver from $17 to $19 is a 10% depreciation. And so you can make a lot of money. A $2 swing in the price of gold from $11.50 to $11.52 it's not so much of an appreciation. And so when people invest, they generally take a look at silver as being short-term and more speculative, and they invest in gold for long-term value.
Well, I've been reading that silver is having a lot more industrial usages. I know gold does because gold is in almost every electronic component that's out there, which the electronic, you know, technology is booming. So that's a huge thing. But so is silver. Silver is becoming more and more used in industry, and so the demand for silver is just going to rise because of the industry usages. Is that accurate?
Yes. So demand will rise as the world economy recovers. There are a lot of industrial uses for silver, and that demand will increase. The other thing to look at with industrial demand is it anchors the price a bit. With silver, because there are other uses for it, those uses have calculated how much money they have to pay for silver, and that keeps silver trading within a certain range. Now, gold has a similar effect for a different reason, and that is that most gold miners right now require roughly $1,200 per ounce to break even.
Oh, wow.
And so that ends up being a floor for gold, meaning that if gold goes beneath $1,200, then gold miners,
they're going
to
stop
worth it for them to produce the gold, and then that's going to constrict supply, and if the demand remains the same, that's going to push the prices up. And so that's why gold's been trading fairly tightly the 2 years at around the 1,200 range.
Wow, but see, that seems manipulated to me because I would think that it wouldn't be at the level of what it just costs to extract it. Because I know, mm-hmm. and I would think you know, that the dollar really has lost some value when they're printing out so many, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but how can you print so many dollars and have each dollar be the same value?
Mm-hmm. Right. And so, you know, that gets into a broader discussion about
go ahead.
But in short, you're exactly right. The Federal Reserve stimulus program, both the virtually 0% interest rate as well as quantitative easing, which has pumped $4.5 trillion into the economy, those have distorted both, you know, whenever a government gets involved in something, especially at that scale, there's always unintended consequences. And one of the big unintended consequences is both the stock market, the bond market, as well as gold have all been distorted. And now on all those prices, the actual earnings are for stocks or the intrinsic value of gold. So in other words, you're right, the Fed policy has been so big that it has just, you know, made everything else influenced by Fed policy for the fundamentals.
Well, exactly, because everybody watches what the Fed says, and that's how the stock market goes up and down. And it's
well, there's only two other precious metals that are in the bullion market, and that is platinum and palladium. Both of them all have very high industrial uses, but at the same time, they are not popular bullion coins. And so the market for them is dramatically smaller than silver or gold. And so when you invest in something like a precious metal, you want to be able to exchange it and have a ready market for buying and selling, which a lot of it comes from Russia. So the recent tensions in Ukraine have greatly influenced the price. And so people who are knowing how to play that made some money over the last 6 months.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, because there's – and it probably will keep going up a little bit, right, if it gets more heated.
Yes, so platinum and palladium are mainly used for catalytic converters, which are used in cars and trucks. So will the demand for palladium and platinum.
So what percentage of your portfolio do you recommend to have in gold or silver or other precious metals?
Yeah, so it really depends, again, on the individual investor, how much they have to invest, whether or not they're investing in the short term or long term. And, you know, I can tell you what I do for Ed Moy. Ed Moy has, you know, at least a decade before I retire, you know, so I still want to invest for the long term. And I'm concerned over what's going on with quantitative easing, what the impact of inflation might be a portfolio as an insurance policy. And you never want an insurance policy that's bigger than what you're trying to insure. And so I keep my gold holdings somewhere between 5 and 10% of my overall portfolio because I want to make sure that if my portfolio does well as to eat up my gains on my portfolio, but if my portfolio does go down, I want enough gold there to offset the loss.
So for me...
It's between 5 and 10%.
You truly see it as an insurance to hedging your bets against the inflation.
I do. And that should be the case whether or not there's a good economy or a bad economy. It's just smart balancing your portfolio so you're adequately diversified.
So,
now, for me, it's a little bit different on my long-term investment, which I have a gold in a gold IRA. When you take a look at all my IRA investments,
yes,
gold is a slightly higher percentage in my retirement portfolio than they are in my active portfolio.
Okay, so that makes sense. So for short-term, you see it as an insurance policy, 5 to 10%. For long-term, you see it as a major investment strategy of which it's a little more than half, 50.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. So you know, when you take a look at gold's price history over the last 50 years, it's had its ups and downs, but overall the trend is up, and the trend has really been up over the last 10 years.
Oh, it's been a huge surge in gold over the last 10 years. But if it's sitting at the cost to extract it, so basically the cost to extract it has gone up as well.
That's right, because the large gold deposits that were easily found 100 years ago aren't there anymore.
Oh, I see.
And so what they have to do is instead of finding a big deposit of gold, now they go back to those old deposits that they've already mined out, and they're processing the dust in order to get the gold, and you have to process a ton of gravel to get 1 gram of gold. And then you have to, so you can imagine how much you need to get 1 ounce of gold.
Well, they claim there's a whole bunch at the core.
Yeah.
You can get to the core. I said they claim there's a whole bunch of gold at the core.
Yeah.
I'm throwing a joke in there and it wasn't funny.
Yes, yeah. So that's what H.G. Wells was thinking when he wrote the book, Journey to the Center of the World.
Yeah, he wanted to get the gold.
Journey to the Center of the Earth. Yeah.
So there's also a big concern that there's going to be huge hyperinflation. And and what are your thoughts on that? I mean, with all this printing and stuff, I mean, there has to be some kind of risk to hyperinflation with all this printing.
Yes. So, here's the Fed's plan, and then this will explain my view on inflation. The Fed's plan to stimulate the economy was to take financial institutions who bought government bonds and mortgage-backed securities and hold on to the bonds. Fed holds on to them. They create money to buy the bonds. They buy it from the institution, give the institution a ton of money, and then the Fed then ends up owning these bonds. And when the economy ends up doing well and the stimulus worked, then the Fed plan is to then sell back those bonds back to the economy and take the money that was paid to them and cancel out the money that was printed, and therefore no harm, no foul. So that's their strategy. I think that's a really, really risky strategy.
We have to take a short station break, and we'll be back with Business Game Changers in a moment.
Hi everyone, this is Dr. Pat. The ancient Inca root vegetable maca is world-renowned for its wide array of health benefits. As a family-run company of true maca specialists, the maca team's mission is to provide you with fresh, organic, premium-quality maca powders at a fair price. Amazing. All of the products are always organically grown, fair-traded, GMO-free, fresh, and potent. So don't take my word for it. Experience the life-changing benefits of maca today. Visit themacateam.com.
There are so many resources out there for meditation, but did you know that Atana's Heart Earth Healing Meditation is available for you for free? Yes, that's right. You can receive this free healing meditation today from Atana Vadili. All you need to do is visit his website, atanamethod.com. That's ATANAMethod.com, and sign up. You will receive your free meditation instantly. That's atanamethod.com.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Tune in to Sheer Alchemy with Leslie Fontaine on TransformationTalkRadio.com and get ready to stir up your passions, remove your blocks, and shift into an entirely new existence. Speaker, teacher, channel, clairvoyant, Leslie Fontaine is a transformation catalyst who channels a powerful energy from Source to catapult listeners into living the life they were born to live. Whether it's shifting from scarcity to abundance, from emotional pain into joy, or from illness into health, Leslie will help you step into the true essence and power of all that you are with the help of the Ascended Masters and Archangels. You will not be the same. Visit TransformationTalkRadio.com for show dates and times and LeslieFontaine.com to say yes to explosive abundance.
Tune in to the Angels and Answers Psychic Radio Show with clairvoyants Artie Hoffman and Sky Siegel every Thursday for a two-hour show, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Transformation Talk Radio. Artie and Sky deliver spiritual and motivational messages with passion and a sense of humor. Call in 800-930-2819 for live and on-air readings. Visit ArtieHoffman.com and SkyOfAngels.com.
Welcome back to Business Game Changers. We are talking with Ed Moy, the past director of the U.S. Mint. And before we get into that, I want to remind you, you can go to my website at sarahwestall.com, and you can hear this interview and all my past interviews in podcast form at my website, sarahwestall.com. So now we're rejoining our interview with Ed Moy.
And it's risky for several reasons. One is you're depending on financial institutions to want to buy these bonds back.
Yeah.
And right now they're earning a lot more money taking that money because nobody is borrowing because the economy is not doing great. Certainly better than everybody else, but it's a shadow of former self. So nobody is borrowing. And so with all this extra money that they can't loan, what they end up doing is they're investing in the stock market, creating a bubble.
Which is what's going on with the stock market. Yep.
That's right. That's right. And so it's hard for me to imagine that an investment bank's going to want to buy back a bond that produces 2% and trade in the money that they're making 8 or 10% on equities. So I think the Fed policy could work, but it's fraught with danger on all sides. And as a result, while, I can't make that prediction that we're going to have hyperinflation, I definitely think the risk is there. And as an investor, I want to make sure I'm diversified enough to take care of that risk if it ever comes up.
Well, if they decide to take they can't take the money out of the stock market without killing the stock market.
That's right. And so,
what are they going to do? It's almost like it's a permanent fixture in the stock market now.
Well, yeah. And there's talk about, with the end of QE, at least they're not putting more money into the stock market. But now if, you've got this raucous party going on, how do you take the money out? The Fed has said, gosh, we don't have a great strategy for that, other than selling the stuff back. And if the market can't take it back, we're willing to hold on to it for 50 years or however long it takes, where we can just sell it back in little bits of pieces. Yes, that's what they'd have to do because if they did sell a lot of it, that would also have another unintended consequence of when banks start holding more of these mortgage-backed securities again, that's going to really whack out the mortgage market. And, so there's a ton of risk on the downside and upside with these easing programs. And I don't think the Fed has had it figured out yet, and that's why I'm hedging my risk and making sure I'm diversified with some gold.
That makes sense. How does a normal person save for a rainy day?
Well, unlike the federal government, you want to make sure that you spend less than what you make.
Yeah.
And Well,
Grandma
simple,
taught
but
the
federal government hasn't figured out how to do it yet.
Yeah, so. Well, I know it's so simple, but it's so obvious, right?
Typically what you do is you'd invest for my purposes, if you're looking for the long term and not speculation, you're investing in a diversified portfolio. So what you want to do is make sure you have adequate proportions of cash, stocks, bonds, and tangible assets, which includes gold. And then within each of those, you want to make sure you have appropriate diversification. So, for example, stocks, you want to be in various industry sectors that all balance each other out. And even in gold, you want to have some gold bullion. You want to also have a couple of rare gold coins in with that. You want to have both a mixture of gold and silver. If you have a big enough portfolio, you want to add a little bit of platinum to that. And so, you know, the whole goal here is to have enough balance and diversification that over the long run, you minimize your risk, you maximize your return, and when you're ready to cash out, you'll have a nice big nut to depend on.
And we would say that should people have a certain amount of gold just at their home and silver at their home and maybe cash as well?
So part of it is informed by my upbringing. I'm Chinese. I was born here, but my parents were born in China. And when my mom got married, her father-in-law gave her a 24-karat gold necklace with 10 gold coins around it, 10 U.S. gold coins, as well as a bracelet, a 24-karat gold bracelet with 10 U.S. gold coins around it. And what my father-in-law was saying was, not, I love you and so honored and happy to have you as my new daughter-in-law. What he was saying is, in my lifetime, I've gone through the fall of Imperial China and the rise of the warlords, the fall of the warlords, the rise of the nationalists, the fall of the nationalists, the rise of the communists, three banking systems, and two currency changes, and now World War II, Korean War, etc.
Yeah,
and
wow,
so what
yeah.
He was saying, so what he was saying to her is, I want to make sure that you have enough portable wealth around your neck and your wrist that you wear every single day. So if you had to run out of the house in an emergency to save the family, you would have enough on you to make sure that the Moy family line would continue through the most difficult circumstances.
But, you know, it's so interesting because they have a sense of wisdom through all their experiences that they've gone through. And when you haven't gone through something like that, you have a sense of security and maybe a false sense of security because it's been stable throughout your short-lived life. And it's really interesting
yes.
talking to people with different perspectives.
Yep, absolutely. And so I grew up with that mentality, is that, yes, banking in the United States is a lot more stable than what it was in China. But the events of 2008 show that these two big failed banks could easily go out of business.
I got to tell you, when you brought that up, I still, and it'll probably be burned in my brain forever, is when George Bush came on the television and he was terrified. You could tell when he was giving that speech that he was absolutely terrified. And if that's not an indication that we are about ready to collapse, I don't know what it, you know, it was, I've never seen a president of this country look terrified. But anyways, go ahead.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just such a hard decision, too, because you have this issue of these banks took these huge reckless risks that bankrupted them, but they're because they were so big, their bankruptcy would have killed the system. But if you bailed them out and saved the system, you end up funding more bad behavior.
Oh, and well, yeah.
That's called moral. And that
they did good things
that,
to help them out, and they just took advantage of all of us.
That's right. And you have the same problem today, Sarah.
Oh, I know.
In that, so we bailed them all out, and then under a Democratic administration, they increased the, how hard they regulate them. And in the end, you still have these too big to fail banks taking too much risk.
It's
and so.
Crazy.
You subsidize, when you subsidize behavior, you get more of it.
Well, and they took, and this should make people very angry, they took so much of that money for their own bonuses. We're ready to collapse. We're in dire straits. Companies need things. People are losing their jobs. People are losing their homes, and they're paying out all these extraordinary, you know, these huge bonuses with our money. I know. You've heard that. People have just been...
When you take a look at the overall U.S. economy, we're certainly better off today than we were in 2008 and 2009. When you parse that, Wall Street's done a lot better than Main Street has, which is why the common person on the street doesn't feel the recovery like Wall Street and the CEOs have.
Well, I talked to the Senate candidate in today's election day all over the place, and I talked to the Republican candidate, Mike McFadden, and he was talking about offline a little bit, and then we talked about it online when I did his interview, how over 50% of the kids coming out of college today are underemployed. They can't get jobs. And that's a indicator, a leading indicator. I teach a business class. That's a leading indicator to a lot of problems. You can't have half of our college kids not getting jobs.
Well, and, you know, you add that on to the 92.5 million Americans who are working age who aren't working.
Oh, gosh.
That is a record. That is a 40-year historic record of people who aren't working. And it's because of so many people have dropped out of the workforce because it's chronic unemployment, that's the reason why the unemployment rate's actually gone down. It's the denominator's gone down, so that's given the impression that things are better, but there's just so many people out of work, and then most of the new jobs created in this economy have been part-time jobs. And that doesn't replace the high pay manufacturing jobs that existed before the recession.
Exactly. Service jobs are not the same thing as manufacturing type jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if I don't ask this question, my husband's going to be mad at me. What?
Okay, I don't want that.
Save my marriage. Okay, what are the reasonable commission rates for gold? If you're going to be buying gold, everybody needs to make a living, right? The people selling to you need to make a living. I understand that you should be paying them commission rates, but what's a reasonable rate?
Yeah, so that's a difficult question. And what I can do is explain, where the costs come in, right? So, just take it, for example, let's just say an ounce of gold costs $1,200. Well, whoever sells it to you, they have to buy that ounce of gold, and that ounce of gold has to be made. And that's what the United States Mint did, is that we made gold bullion coins.
You're the wholesaler, right?
Right. So we're the wholesalers, and it would cost us, say, $75 to make that gold, that 1 ounce gold coin. And so automatically, the price of that gold went from $1,200 to $1,275. And then we wholesale it to retailers, but really large retailers that end up becoming our distributors. And so they'll buy it from us for $12.75, and then they'll resell it to a gold dealer and add their margin onto it. And then the gold dealer, when they sell it to you, add their margin onto it. And so that's why when you see advertisements for buying gold coins and gold trades at $1,200, but you're going to pay $1,325 for that gold coin, you think you're getting ripped off. Well, that's a big chunk of that, the manufacturing cost of that gold coin, which when you trade other gold coins, everybody assumes that manufacturing cost. So once you pay for it, that's going, so when you sell it again, you're not going to sell that gold coin for $1,200. It'll sell for $1,275. But then you have the add-on margins from the distributor and then the gold dealer. And then I normally add on a percent or two. And then you also have the complicated issue that some people don't have a gold inventory. And so when you buy that gold at a certain price, they then hold on to your money until they can find gold coin that they can buy at that price, where they don't lose money on it. And then there are other people who have large gold inventory, but depending on when they bought that gold, they want to sell you the gold that they bought cheaper, so at your price they make it a larger margin, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a more complicated picture than just people adding on their costs.
We have to take a short station break, and we'll be back with Business Game Changers and Ed Moy to finish out our interview in a moment.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
And we are back. You're rejoining Business Game Changers, and we are talking with Ed Moy, the past director of the U.S. Mint, and we will rejoin it now.
That makes sense. Okay, so what would, so if you, if gold is going for $1,200 and you end up paying $1,325, that's fairly reasonable.
Yes. And that, the other thing that you need to think about is when you're buying gold, or silver or any other precious metal, and you pay that markup for it, you have to have, the gold or the gold price appreciate, enough to cover that amount, so that you, end up, break even or making money on that investment, which is why, when you buy precious metals, it's better to buy them for the long term, because they're going to appreciate, than playing the short term speculative market.
It just doesn't work with those, with it, because you need to make up that, because when you're, let's say you buy it for $1,325, you're not going to be able to sell, you're not going to have to sell it for $1,200 if that's, let's say it's valued at $1,200 with all the cost to produce it and the markups, you might be buying it for $1,325. You can't sell it for $1,325. You can only sell it for maybe $1,275, right? Because the other markups.
That's correct.
Those other markups go to the dealers that need to then resell it in the market. I'm just
trying to
tell the average person why these costs are and what you should be expecting.
Yes, you've nailed that analysis spot on. And so when you invest in that, I would encourage your listeners to really be educated and end up going with a precious metal dealer that is not a high pressure one, but one that is more consultative and informative and educational through that process. There's a lot of people out there who put a lot of pressure on, who have the world's on fire, you gotta buy it tomorrow because gold's gonna triple in price soon. I tend to, and where I buy my gold is from people who keep me informed, tell me what the pros and cons are, give me the information so I can make the decision, an informed decision myself.
And you were serving as an advisor and chief strategist for the Fortress Gold Group. And do you serve in roles with other gold companies, or is this the one that you've pretty much staked your claim to because of the way they operate?
Yeah, it's the latter. I joined Fortress Gold because they have the approach that I just outlined. That's where I have my gold IRA. And further, there are independent sources like Inc. Magazine that recently added them to the Inc. 500, which is the 500 fastest growing companies in America, because that approach is so different than what the rest of the gold market is. And so they sell based on education and a lot less by fear. And that really resonates with me, that given my reputation, I wanted to be associated with a company that operated like that.
So that's good to know, because people are, when you're seeing all those ads about gold, I think people are very confused, and it seems like a shady industry. I mean, honestly, you know, you just don't know where to buy. And so it's nice to know that there's really reputable companies out there that you can invest an IRA in. You can buy gold, you're getting reasonable prices, and they're going to stand behind it.
Yep. Absolutely right. There's so much noise out there. You really want to go with a quality company that's going to be around. There are several objective factors that your listeners can do their own research on. One is most of these companies are ranked by the Better Business Bureau and other third-party rankers. I would also take a look at the state regulators. Each state has a regulatory body that accumulates customer complaints on these various companies. And so you want to take a look at how many complaints they have and what the nature of the complaints have been. There are objective factors out there that can help your listeners make a decision on which company to go with. I've done that work, and that's why I'm with Fortress.
Okay, that makes sense. I have two more quick questions, because I know you're a very busy, demanded guy. What do you think about electronic currency? Because banks want to go towards completely electronic currency, and you know, so and the government probably does too, so they can track things. What do you think of that?
Yeah, so you know, there's going to be a natural evolution of currency. You know, just the physical form. It used to be a physical currency was in precious metal. You know, you had silver dollars, you had gold $20 pieces. And then that went to then paper representations of that. You know, so you ended up having bills. And then the creation of checks and money orders was a substitute for the bill. And then eventually you had electronic commerce where when you deposit a dollar in a bank, that dollar is converted into an electronic dollar that's then put in your savings account. And so the next step beyond that is digital currency, currency that completely exists in cyberspace and never is a representation of a physical dollar out there. And so just the natural evolution of currencies, that digital currency is going to be in the world's future, whether it is the dollar created digitally or whether it's a new digital currency like Bitcoin. I don't know what that future holds, but that's the direction everything's moving in.
It's inevitable that things will be electronic. And,
yes, and then you also have all the security problems with that too. Just with all the credit card hackers and things like that, show how easily electronic financial transactions can be compromised.
Well, wouldn't you
and
say
so that whole game has to improve?
Well, wouldn't you say then there would be a whole other market for gold or some other kind of physical currency as well? I mean, there would have to be outside the mainstream market that would generate.
Yes.
Which may be gold and silver.
Yeah. Well, Sarah, my view is usually with things like currency, one thing doesn't stop and a new thing starts. You end up having all these things exist, but in different proportions to each other. So in other words, in a free market, people end up using the form of currency that is the most convenient and most efficient for every single transaction. And so for some, it'll be checks for this, and others will be credit card for that, and others will be a digital transfer for that. You know, it's just like the entertainment industry. You know, movies were supposed to kill musicals, and TV was supposed to kill movies, and cable was supposed to kill TV, and the internet was supposed to kill cable.
It doesn't work.
All those continue to exist. Maybe fewer people see musicals today than they did 100 years ago, but there's still a niche market for that.
Sure.
Gold's been around for 5,000 years. It's not going away tomorrow. Gold will continue to find a way to be relevant and valuable in the economy.
Just for the industrial usages, period, it's going to be. So you told me that at the beginning offline that you're not, because I know a couple Moys who are just really smart, and you told me that you're not from that line probably because you're not smart like them. And I got to disagree with you. You're one smart man.
Well, Sarah, you know, all the nice things that you say to me still won't get you a free sample from the mint today.
Oh, well, geez. Thanks a lot. Well, you know what? You are such a busy person, and I know that I'm not sure what you think about this, but do you want information up on the radio show about where they can contact you for questions or something like that?
Yes. So if you're interested in contacting me and you have some additional follow-up questions, you can go to my website at edmoy.com. And there's a section there where you can submit questions to me, and I get them directly, and I'm happy to answer any questions that people have. I also accumulate all my media interviews and the op-eds that I write on that website. So if you're interested in reading up more about some of these issues, they're more than happy to go to my website.
Oh, that's great. I'll make sure I put that up on the radio show. And this show, my interview with you took longer than we were originally expecting, but this was so interesting that I'm like, I got to talk to this guy. He knows what he's doing. So this is great.
80% of my radio interviews go 3 times longer than what they ended up budgeting for, and then they end up breaking it into several different interviews.
So you just go with it, whatever.
And Sarah, you've asked some great questions, and I really appreciate the homework you've done on this.
Okay, well, good. Well, thank you, Ed, and I appreciate the conversation today.
Okay, call back anytime.
Okay, great. Thanks. Have a great day.
All right. Bye, Sarah.
Yeah, bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview. If you want to get contact information for him or see more of his work, go to my website at sarahwestall.com. I'll have that up there for you to be able to see all his interesting work that he has going on. I know he constantly blogs and does different interviews around as well. So he's out there, and he is just a source of really good information. And I also want to remind you to go to my website at sarahwestall.com to listen to this interview again or any other past shows that I have done. So for now, I hope everyone has a beautiful day.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, as Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in Mondays at 12 noon Pacific time and learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today.